Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. Here District, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem in the history of college basketball to win a national championship. Yeah. At the same school, UCLA.
The other guys
that won championships. Huh? But at the same school. At the same school, Bart.
The Boosers are trying to catch y'all.
There they are.
Oh, yeah.
This may be the year.
I talked to Carlos this morning, man. Y'all trying to get anybody out some company soon.
Carlos and Cam. Uh-oh. Man. All right, Chris, we got to milk that for as long as we can, another couple of weeks at least, right. Man. We got to get what we can out of it. But so, Mark Spears, senior NBA writer for Anscape ESPN. Mark Spears has something that, man, I've been trying to get for the past few years now. He is a Hall of Famer, the Kirk Gowdy Media Award. Mark, welcome to Here District, Mark. First of all, thanks for joining us, man.
Always a pleasure. Always love having fun with y'all.
But tell me about this Hall of Fame selection. Did you get the call from
man,
John?
Why you start with that every time I come on, man? I'm a writer.
But was there any pins and needles?
It's not like the one that you're getting. It's not the same. They had me talk on Friday. You're going to talk on Saturday.
But did you get a call from John DeLiva, like, you know, at a certain appointed time saying, you know, Mark, congratulations.
I did.
Okay.
I ain't got buckets like you.
Yeah, but I got three calls and they were all like, hey, sorry to
that sucks.
Sorry to tell you, man. Maybe next time you got enough. But anyway, I was just curious kind of how they handled the Kirk Gowdy meeting.
My jersey ain't retired nowhere.
But your ink pens are. Your pens are. But it's your
I'm just saying.
Is your
jersey retired?
Okay, yeah, a couple. Yeah. High school. UCLA. Yeah. NBA. Okay. Yeah. A couple
three
places.
Three places, right? Three.
Yeah, three so far. We try to get them to retire.
I was nice about high school. They still ain't retired my jersey.
Me neither.
I'm trying to get him to retire at Jesse Owens Park in South Central, too, because I was MVP like 5 years running there,
from the
tinies all the way up to the midgets. So anyway, but that's a whole other story. I digress. But listen, man, congratulations on all you're doing out there. And I guess, you know, you got a story for us, though. We were talking like off air about the dunk. Yeah. I was able to pull it off at 70 once again. You were talking about once I get hung, maybe it was time to hang them up.
I said keep going till you get hung.
Well, I got hung. I got hung a few times initially. It wasn't one take, Marcus, on the dunk. But you said you got a story for us about another NBA player.
I got a lot of obscure stories, and one of them was one time I visited military bases in Turkey, in Italy, in Bosnia with the Denver Nuggets. Okay. Wow. This is, I think it was like after 9/11, and it was myself, the Nuggets dancers, the mascot, George McLeod, Chris Anderson.
Yeah.
And there was one other player. What's my boy's name? Played at Florida. Dark skinned brother, Chris, you should know this. He played for the Nuggets at Ops. Golly, I'll get his name. And I feel bad because he's a great guy. Keep going.
Daniel Harvey.
Teddy Dupay.
Yeah. That bounce. Yeah. You knew what I was talking about. He could jump into sleep. So Clyde Drexler was a consultant for the Nuggets. Kiki Vanderway, your former UCLA great contemporary, was a GM. And so we're in Italy and we're in this gym, right? Clyde's got like street clothes on, something like that. And they weren't really respectfully as excited about Donnell and Chris Anderson and George McLeod as they were. You know, Clyde Drexler, who was at that time probably about 5 years removed from playing. Maybe. So we're sitting there and the crowd, this is in Italy. This is in Naples, Italy. They start chanting, Clyde, 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 because they wanted him to dunk. Mm. He ain't stretched. He ain't street clothes. I look at Kiki. He looks at me. I'm like, man, I hope he don't bite. What do you think he did?
He dunked.
Oh, he bit. He bit. Oh. He bit, man. So Clyde walks out there, first dunk. You know how you do the running, no dribble dunk? Running, no dribble dunk. That's why Chris is laughing. we remember that as kids, right?
Facts.
Missed the first one. They're like, oh, man. I'm like, why are you doing this? He ain't even stretched nothing. Clyde. The crowd keeps starting chatting again. So he's like, I'm going to go try this again. Goes up. Blam! Ball bounced to half court. I'm like, oh, me and Kiki were like, oh, no, this ain't good, man. This ain't good. Clyde. It's getting louder and louder. He's sweating. He's mad. All of a sudden, I feel like he's back in the NBA Finals. His competitive juices is hitting. Man, this dude jumped, put the ball back by his ass, and dunked it so hard, man.
Wow.
Now, he probably didn't walk for like 2 weeks after that.
Yeah.
But it was like, I wish we had video of it, man. It was incredible.
Yeah. People don't understand just how good. You know, Google some highlights. Clyde going at Michael Jordan sometimes, man. One of the most
underrated scorers ever. Like Clyde didn't get no love, man.
None. He was silky smooth.
Yeah,
but he was he was excited to watch, but still smooth. You real sweet, smooth with it.
Sweet.
I mean, and he would give you some of the dunks where he cocked those knees up and take off from distance, and you just didn't think he'd be able to get there. We made an all-star team together. My final all-star game in 1986. And he was, I think, maybe a first-time all-star, and he was giving me all these props. I wish I'd touched his legs. Like, look, I wish I could transfer this over here right now. Let me have some of this that you got right now, man, because I was a big-time favorite of his. But, man, so let's talk about these Bucks, Mark, since we got you here. And
I'm going to say something, because I know y'all going to bring it.
What are we going to bring up, Mark?
Man, I know how y'all do, man. Huh? I know y'all love me. I was wrong.
I forgot about that. Right, yeah, no, that was, see, I would.
Okay,
I would,
well, then we ain't got to talk about this.
See, I wouldn't even go in there, but since you brought it up.
Get him, MJ.
I had forgotten about that. Just you know, temporary.
I'm sure Monis would have tipped you off.
Well, Monis definitely reminded us, and it just passed through my mind. I had forgotten about it, but you mean you made a statement. I'm not here to, you know, like, whoa,
I'm just happy y'all even watched me on TV.
All day.
Please.
And respect, you know, your opinion and the way things were shaking out, you know, it wasn't like what you were saying was like just totally out of the blue.
I mean,
some crazy
for
guy,
full
man.
Disclosure, Bucks fans, look, I said that I thought Giannis had played his last game. I also work for ESPN, which stands for Entertainment Sports Network. So I'm trying to have fun.
Right, but
I actually did believe it. I think he's in a really interesting. I love Giannis. He's an amazing guy, and I don't know. It's hard for me to say somebody's higher than Kareem, but or higher than you.
Yeah,
but
he's
certainly the face of the franchise for a long time, and brought y'all something you hadn't seen in a long time. And I wonder. And this is being completely serious. Like when in his conversations with Damon Lillard, did he realize that maybe the grass isn't always greener on the other side, right? Dame, and I don't know that Damon Lillard's decision to go back or ability to go back to Portland was a shot at the Bucks. I just think he appreciated what that franchise meant to him, what being in Portland means to him. I never thought Dame seemed comfortable being away from Portland, being away from his family, his kids.
Right.
And I just wonder for Giannis, like, especially at this stage of your career, is the grass greener, right? Like, I don't think people realize it's funny. Like, well, you got to go somewhere else to win a championship. You know how hard it is to win a championship?
Yeah, like, wherever you go.
I think that's so underestimated. Like, one team could win. And you can have the right team, and then health comes or a bad matchup or – only one to win a championship, you got to have a great team. You got to be healthy. You have to have good matchups and you have to have luck. Right.
Yeah.
And so I say all that to say, that's not to say that potentially going somewhere else could aid those hopes. But the, you know, when you're somewhere where, like, you could say, I did something Larry Bird did. I did something that Magic Johnson did.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan.
Dirk Nowitzki, Kobe,
probably Steph Curry, right?
Yeah.
Like, very few people can say that they wore one jersey with one franchise. And if you look at all those guys, like, it wasn't peaches and cream every season.
Yeah.
But if you ask all of them now, you know, rest in peace, Kobe. If you ask them now, like, what that means to them to have just worn one jersey, like, I bet you if you go ask Tony Parker about that one season in Charlotte, I bet you he'd erase it if he could.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's the thing you almost kind of think about. If Milwaukee could figure out a way to just put him, just not easy to put competitive players around him, get a high draft pick. I don't know, that legacy in one place, man, is quite beautiful.
Well, and so we were talking about that a little bit, Mark, before you came on, in terms of that one, that competitive personnel around Giannis. What's the kind of the one thing he needs? My take is kind of a Chris Middleton, like big wing. It doesn't have to be an all-star, but it's got to be a great player, budding all-star, maybe a level below. And so we've got some young guys. You wrote a great article about Ryan Rollins. Kevin Porter Jr. is having a great year. Usman Jang has potential. But in your mind, are any of those guys you think that can make that jump? And if not, what type of player do you think Giannis kind of needs, this team needs?
And in order to make that jump, I think they're good, really good, respectfully complimentary guys. They're really good players.
Yeah.
But in order to be elite in this league, you need all stars next to you.
Right.
You know, Miles Turner, I think he'll have a brighter future. You know, hopefully those two could get some more time together. But I think in the backcourt, you always need a dog in the backcourt. You know, in the wing position, you always need a score in the wing position. So this draft, I'm really curious about who they could get. There are certain guys I think can walk in and really help immediately. And there's some young guys that might need 3 or 4 years to be special. But this is an elite draft that could help. And I just think the general managers, the front office, obviously there's a lot of – they're hamstrung in a lot of ways financially, but they're going to have to be creative to bring somebody else elite to him.
Staying on Rollins and KPJ, that backcourt, that young backcourt, do you like – like the numbers, the data shows that, you know, they're really good on the court. Now, do you see something in them that makes you think that they're the long-term solution for the Bucks?
No, I mean, they're both really good players, but I think what you guys want is championships, right? Like, it just depends on who else you filled the roster with. If you get some outstanding wing to go with them, and then court. But what if you have an opportunity to – Like to me right now, I think the Bucks probably going to have to take something risky. Like, would you take Ja Morant if you could get him? There's something like creative that you're going to have to do that maybe it's not one person, but collectively just adding a lot more talent, adding a lot more veterans can give. Because, I mean, Giannis is Giannis, right? But I think he at minimum needs what you hope Dame was going to be next to him, right? You need another dog next to him, and then you could fill out the rest of the Avengers.
So you mentioned the draft guys who are available. Is there a guy or two in this draft between the Petersons and DeBonstas and Boozer and Wilson and Brown and Lowe? Is there somebody in there that you think can step in? I don't want to say right away, but within 2 years.
You can say that.
Okay. Is there a guy you think can step in right away, but be a major, be an all-star caliber guy, just come in, dropping 20 a game and just do, you know, just coming in, hitting the ground running. Is there one of these guys or more that you think could do that?
Peterson. I think he's special. He's a walking bucket. I see KJ over there smiling like, I'm not going to throw the Kobe stuff at him. That's not fair. I'm not going to do that. But he scores really easy. He has great mentors in C.J. McCollum and C.J.'s brother, who also plays overseas. He's from Canton, Ohio, and listens closely to those two guys. When you watch him play, and I'm sure you guys have watched him play, he just
Has he played? No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding.
When he has played, it looks easy.
Yeah. Man.
It looks like a guy where he just like, I'm ready for the next level. I think Devonta, his energy, the way he plays, he's going to get, and Caleb Wilson are kind of the same. I think they'll come in and the spacing will help them and they'll be able to use their athleticism to their advantage more. So I think they'll help. You know,
sure.
Boozer, I just wonder if he and Giannis could coexist.
Because
they're both really big guys that, you know, spend time in the paint. But I think it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
I think, you know, talking to Carlos, I'm giving you guys a hint on my story, but, you know, he said whoever passes on him is going to regret it. Whoever passes on his son is going to regret it. And I think in terms of a guy that's going to be able to come right in and play right now, he'll be able to do that. I just also think that in this draft, there's just so – I think it's going to be a draft that has a Donovan Mitchell, so to speak, a Klay Thompson, a Kawhi, like somebody you pick 10, 11, 12, 5 years from now is going to be a star, right? And so this is a draft where even if the Bucks went like 8th or 10th, they might be able to nab somebody that could be really, really special. And this is what I love about these kind of drafts, because I think the top four is written in. We know who they are, right?
Right.
Caleb, DeBanza, Peterson, Boozer, right? But after that, there's still some really intriguing players. And this is when we see how good your scouting department is, right?
Hmm.
Whether they should take Amen or whether they should take Tunde, your L.A. boy, playing at Bell. Like, whether you should maybe just go to Australia and get the Mexican kid, Karim Garcia, who I think is Scottie Pippen. Like, you know, like there's some talent in this draft that goes deep, and somebody's going to land somebody at 10, 11, or 12 that 5 years from now, you're like, dang, he got picked that late? And that's just how good this draft is.
Cameron Boozer. And Chris, you know, we've kind of gone back and forth. You were really, really high on Boozer 2 months ago. You dipped a little bit, but when I watch him, man, I gotta say though, the thing that impresses me, guys, about Cameron, but he's a tough shot maker from different angles. I mean, on the move, through contact. You know, because I was trying to hate on him. I was just like, he's not jumping out the gym. He's not dunking on. You know, just all this just jaw dropping athleticism. But he's a smart player that knows it, much like his dad. His dad was cut from a similar mold. Just a smart, smart player who's really effective at getting kind of tough buckets. So, I don't know. Guys like that, to me, are intriguing. I mean, like a Khan Knipl. You know, nobody thought he would be, anywhere near as good as Cooper Flagg. You know, and now here he is just showing smart players who have a great understanding of the game, that understand where their shots are and can execute and knock those shots down under duress. I mean, there's
and another thing about him is he playing like he a senior at a freshman. He coming here and destroying anybody. They brought Michigan in front of him. Psh. They brought the whole ACC in front of him. Like, nobody has really stymied this kid. Another thing that he's pretty quiet, chill. He's not a big personality guy. But his dad pointed out to me that he's a big-time leader, and he's a big-time winner. Yeah. And so I'm actually starting to get more excited about him. And I'm going to, you know, my question is, in the pace and the speed of the NBA, can he run with it, right? Does he have to get smaller to run with it? Because I think part of his strength is his power. And if he has to, I don't know that there's 20 pounds to drop, but if there is, does that change his game a little bit? But you can make an argument that this season is the greatest season of any freshman in Duke history. Can you make an argument that this is the best season of any player in Duke history? It's been that good. And, you know, I think when it comes to picking and he's sitting there And you're like, dang, these three dudes before him got potential, right? AJ got this potential, yeah. And Caleb got potential, yeah. And, you know, Peterson got potential. But I know, you know, right? You know right. what you're getting in Boozer.
Yeah. Yeah, last thing on Boozer really quickly, guys. The thing that, to me, stands out the most about him is his kind of calm under pressure, his ability to rise to the occasion when Duke needs him the most. And he doesn't always have to be inside. I mean, if you watch him, you know, yeah. second half of the season, he's out top running screen and rolls. On game-winning plays, he's got the ball, Mark. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that speaks to the trust from Shire in him, and that speaks from, like, a different type of DNA. So that is the intangible that I identified about Carlos Boozer, like, I mean, about Cameron Boozer that will translate immediately, I think, in year one, wherever he gets drafted.
Yeah.
And I'll add this, too. I got blessed with some courtside seats when they played Cal. He's a big dude, man. I didn't know he was that. He's a big dude.
Was he listening
to
6'9"? Was he 6'9"? 6'8"? 6'9"? Was he listening?
He's like, I'll say this, because you in front of it every day. You sideline every day. So he's probably Wendell Carter size.
Wow.
That's nice.
That's legit.
I'm talking about the width.
Yeah, the shoulders and all width, that. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times in basketball, you got to, like I tell people, you got to buy, but if you're going to spend some money, go spend some money to see Wimby, because you have to see it in person. You have to see it.
Facts.
And but when I said that about Boozer, right, like, then you guys kind of lit up a little bit. You're like, oh, he is that big. He's a big dude. Big, strong. Okay. You know, I wouldn't want to fight him, cat.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, that's good information. So, all right, let's go to that great article you wrote about Ryan Rollins, man. You got him to talk about some stuff, some S hitting the fan type stuff for him that he's never really opened up that much about or at all. I don't know if I've ever heard him discuss it. Yeah. How were you able to do that? And then what was your takeaway from talking with Ryan for that great interview you did with him?
You know, Ryan, I live in the Bay Area, and so the majority of the regular season games I go to by default are Golden State Warrior games. And so when he came, and he wasn't with the Warriors a long time, I got to know him a little bit, chopped it up with him a little bit, and just heard some, you know, he came from University of Toledo, so there wasn't a lot I knew about him. But, you know, so I wouldn't say I had a strong relationship with him, but there was a familiarity there.
Yeah.
And I guess I always say, maybe this is journalism 101 thing, like, and Monis will like this, your super producer, but there's always ways of asking people something when they had some kind of, you know, roadblock or something disappointing. And I just asked him if he could just explain what happened. And basically what happened, for people that don't know, was you had a guy that was basically a millionaire working for the Washington Wizards who got arrested, not arrested. He got caught stealing little things from like silly stuff, right?
Shoplifting
that he, it wasn't like he needed it. He just was, it was like for sport. And it was something that he said, he kind of alluded to, like, something he had just done as a kid and done his whole life, and it caught up to him. And it was just silly that he was doing that. And he said it bit him in the ass. And so, but what happened since then, if he was in Washington, he'd just be another one of those young guys there. And it ended up, as in his words, a blessing in disguise that Washington waived him because of that incident, and he ended up in Milwaukee. And the one thing about Doc Rivers, man, Doc has the most haters. I love Doc Rivers, man. I'll fight on the hill for Doc Rivers. He's done some great stuff for me. You know, since my days being around him when he was with the Celtics. And Doc's typical Doc. He's like, I didn't care what he did. How's he now, and can he play?
Yeah.
Doc saw him practice with him a few times. He's like, this dude's in the G League? Nah, he need to be with us. Like, to Doc's credit, there was no preconceived notions. There was no, I'm going to have hold this against this dude that he made this mistake, right? He already dealt with enough embarrassment from it. Yeah. Doc just put his arm around him and gave him the ball and said, go. In a lot of ways, not that Rondo had a situation like that, but when he got Rondo, Rondo was damaged goods. He was the third string point guard who people didn't think could make it or was nothing. And I remember covering the Celtics that first year in 2007, and Doc had enough confidence in him to give him the ball to be a starting point guard when he never had been with Ray and Paul and Kevin. And he did it, and he was able to do it. And Doc installed that confidence and ultimately got the vets to buy in. And because I was like, they're going to get a point guard early in the season, no doubt. There's no way they could do this. No, they ain't anyone. And so Doc saw something that I don't think, please correct me if I'm wrong. Do you think most coaches would have put the ball in Rondo's hands with a team like that at that time? And then he ended up helping Rondo becoming a special player.
Yeah. And to your point, so I wrote a bookmark called The Crenshaw Chronicles, talking about some of the greats from Crenshaw. There's a guy, and Chris, you know this guy, but Stanley Brundy played at DePaul out of Crenshaw, played with Stevie Thompson and those great teams at Crenshaw in the mid to late 80s. Anyway, he made a mistake, got caught up, not a drug guy at all, got caught up trying something for the first time, tested positive the next day. They had a drug test the next day. But he never got back in the league, Mark. It led the CBA in scoring 2 or 3 years in a row, 27, 28 a game. Wound up going over Israel playing until he was 50 years old. And he's just a little bit older than that now. But my point is, when you talk about Ryan Rollins, and this is what I appreciate about Doc, you know, that instead of holding that against him, like it seems like the Wizards were about to do, now, you know, you give this kid a chance, a second chance, like Stanley Brundy didn't get. And now Ryan Rollins, we're talking about him as one of the leading candidates for most improved. Does Ryan have a chance to win most improved, or are they going to give this to the Portland dude, Denny, or to Jalen Johnson? I mean, with the way that
there's that approach. Jalen was an all-star.
Nice last year.
Another guy is kind of Cative from the Celtics. He's had, I think there's a lot of candidates, and Ryan's certainly one of them most improved.
Yeah. Well, the fact they're talking about him for that award is major as it is. Sure. So Doc Rivers for the Hall of Fame, man. What's going on? Doc didn't make it the first time around. You profiled him earlier.
Silly for him.
Yeah.
Doc is the only coach in the top 10 in wins that's not in the Hall of Fame. I expect him to be. If he's not, that's an embarrassment.
Why wouldn't he be? Why wouldn't he be? What would be the reason why a voter would not put a top 10 all-time wins guy into the Hall of Fame? You know, not active. We're talking about in the history of the game.
Pat
Riley's and Popovich's and Don Nelson's and all these.
He has the ability, you know, depending on how much longer he coaches, to pass Pat Riley up. And get to the fifth spot. There's no reason other than hate to me.
Yeah.
the coaches in that top 10 did not at least win a championship.
Right.
All of them did not coach in the finals. You know, Doc coached in the finals 3 times.
Well, do you think blowing 3-1 leads 3 different years, 2003, Orlando against the Pistons, 2015 with the Clippers and Houston or whoever. Then
2020, the bubble, I saw that team quit on them.
That's what Doc talked about. Yeah, I saw that.
I was still, to this day, the most stunning game I ever seen in my life. And there were some great players on that team. Kawhi was on that team. Paul George was on that team. I don't know. They just didn't want to be there. And that team could have been a champion.
They
were the scariest team in the bubble, but just from the beginning, they're the team that also had the most drama. You know, they had the lemon pepper situation with Lou Williams.
Lou Will not only didn't want to be there.
Yeah, Pat Bev.
Yeah.
They had three players that left the bubble and came back.
Wow.
They and the Lakers both, which is interesting because the Lakers ended up winning, both wanted to leave.
Right.
All the other teams wanted to stay. Those two teams wanted to leave. So for whatever reason, that team wasn't really invested in it. So I don't blame Doc or Ty Lue, because Ty Lue was one of the coaches too, right, for that. I think one thing that there was another team or two that, and I'm not caping for Doc, I'm just, I think we needed to really decipher each team, because two of those teams that lost the 3-1 lead weren't even the favorites.
Right, right.
So,
yeah.
Hey.
I think Houston was a higher seed.
6-6 wins is 6-6 wins.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? And a lot of those guys, I would say, I don't know anybody in that top 10 who's been put to the fire more than Doc Rivers in terms of 3-1 or this. He's 6-6 wins.
And he's
got coach of the year, and he's been a championship coach. And if you look at the resume, a lot of some of the other guys, and I'm not going to call nobody out, but nah, it's, to me, it's just, it's silly and it's inevitable. And I know it's something that he really wants, and
he'll get it this year. I'm pretty sure. I mean, he'll get it just based on everything you've talked about, and he keeps moving up that list. So I expect him to get in this year. And then just finally, Mark, kind of going around the league. Look, and I got to preface this by saying Bam Adebayo earns his money. He comes out, he plays hard, he works hard. But my son Josh came into the bedroom the other night like, Dad, Bam's got 63 and 64. Turn the game on. I'm like, man, I'm going to finish watching Abby Phillips, man. I'll see that.
I feel you.
You really like stressing yourself out.
Abby's got a great crew on tonight, man. I'm watching Abby tonight, man.
You're stressing yourself out.
I'll see the highlights, man. Yeah. But no, but what's your take on that, man, in terms of Bam and the 83 and Kobe, and everybody's out here in L.A. talking about Kobe is turning over in his grave because it's out of his wheelhouse. I mean, if it's Tyler Hero, I can get Bam. It was just so unexpected based on his game and kind of who he is as a player. And what does it say about the Heat culture? Does it say anything about the Heat culture?
One thing I'll say is Bam is an exceptional person.
Yeah.
Exceptional. Great, great guy.
Absolutely.
He only doing what the coach allow him to do.
Right.
Yep. I mean, because Spo could have taken him out, and he didn't.
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm sure he wanted it at some point. Spo could have pulled the plug, and, you know, we could be Monday morning GM and question. I kind of thought that after he passed LeBron for, you know, the 61 LeBron had with the Heat, that it was time. Because it was a blowout. I mean, like, when you look at the situations with, like, a Klay Thompson, a Steph Curry, Kobe, like, surely if their coaches would have let them stay in, you know, on different occasions, you know, they could have had more. It did get kind of sad because it was like they were fishing for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
There was even Spo even called a challenge on a play where he thought.
Oh, did he? Okay.
I didn't Bam got fouled and tried to get more free throws. Like,
Spo.
Yeah, so that kind of like surprised me. I'm like, Spo really wanted him to do this, huh? Like, I think that the sportsmanship part of it is, I think, something that I understand the issue with. The person part of it, I'm not, the Bam is gold as far as I'm concerned. So I think he was just doing what was in front of him, right? It was in front. If the coach don't take him out, was he, you know, he gonna keep going? But it did get kind of embarrassing and pathetic. I talked to the fly jock Tom Joyner, who's a season ticket holder, who sits next to Jamal Mashburn, who was there, and he sat next to Asia Wilson too. And he was like, "Hey man, he got beat up on all those free throws. He took enough pain for those free throws, so he earned it." So it doesn't take away from what Kobe did. Bigger question is this: like, we could debate that, but my question to you is, can somebody do it? And when the two names that come to my mind is Wimby and Giannis, because and you guys' basketball IQ is elite. People always think it's a guard that could do it, and I don't think a guard can do it. Because who's going to allow you to like just go nuts three pointers like that, right? It's I think that's really difficult to do. You have to go like Bam went to the free throw line 36 times and still was short, right? Like Wilt wasn't shooting threes, but you need somebody that could get to the line, score easy buckets inside and shoot threes.
Yeah.
And to me, the best candidate to maybe going forward who could challenge it is Wemby.
You don't think Luka? You don't think Luka could beat it?
I just think it's too hard.
He's already okay.
When we say beat it, what are we talking about? 100? We like, talking about Wilt? What are we
like,
talking
like,
about?
No, 100. Getting a Wilt. Like I just think you have to have the ability, like to get to the line a lot, and Luka can do that, and Shai could do that. But what are they going to hit for, like 23 pointers or something like that? Like, that's just, to me, the degree of difficulty for a guard is just so much higher. Like, they almost have to have like this perfect, like at some point, if you're killing it like that, you're going to get doubled at the 3-point line.
Right. Right.
Like, so what are you going to be like a movie and start? But if you're scoring on the inside and getting fouled, and you can shoot threes, and you can get to the line. To me, that has a recipe of possibly getting close. And I think Wemby has the complete game to maybe do that.
Yeah. Well, listen, Mark Spears, man, we're going to let you go. We appreciate you coming by the Hill District, man. Always a pleasure, man, talking to you.
All right, future Hall of Famer. Man,
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I appreciate that, man. But thank you, man, for coming by Hill District, man. We'll see you around the way.
Peace.